This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the DRF Players Podcast, show number 207, January 27th. This is Mike Hogan, and it's my pleasure to be joined today by a couple guests, not the usual guests on the DRF Players Podcast, but they've both been on before. First, I'd like to welcome in DRF's own Mr. Byron King. Welcome, Byron.
Hello, Mike.
How's everything down in Louisville or Lexington? Where are you?
Louisville.
Thought so.
Everything is fine. You know, it's rather be in Florida, but it's all things considered, it's quite nice.
Well, nice. Well, welcome aboard. And we've also got from Timeform US, the chief figure maker, Mr. Craig Milkowski, back for more after our duo session on Tuesday. Welcome, Craig.
Hey, thanks. I guess it's a good sign you're having me back already.
I got a lot of good feedback from people who listened to the show. I think they really enjoyed our conversation. They really enjoyed everything you had to say in general about figures and handicapping. So we're going to put you to the test today and see how good you really are by making you actually handicap some races.
Sounds good.
But before we get to that, of course, today is the first day of NHC 18 out in Las Vegas at Treasure Island. We've got a lot of players I know that listen to the podcast that are going to be taking part in NHC 18. And the excitement is palpable, both online and I'm sure in the room. Of course, I'm in the New York office, so I wasn't able to make it out this year. But our co-host on the podcast, Mr. Peter Thomas Fornatel, is there, as always. And it was my pleasure to speak with him just a few minutes prior to the show, and here's how that conversation went. All right, now it's my pleasure to be joined by Mr. Peter Thomas Fornatel. Pete, normally we're in different seats, and you're acting as the host. But this week, you, of course, are in Las Vegas at the National Handicapping Championship. So good morning. How's everything out there?
Things are really good, Mike. It's been a fun few days getting ready for this tournament. Lots of news already and some articles that I've put up on DRF.com over the past few days. And indeed, the shoe is on the other foot here, though the longtime listeners of the podcast will know that for a good, I'd say it was a four-month stretch there back in 2015, you were the host and I was the guest. So it's not completely foreign.
Well, it's true. But I have to say, as a host, it's maybe not my strong suit. I definitely miss you in the hosting role. It's a lot harder, especially running the board, especially trying to think up smart things to say. So get back safely. I'm looking forward to next Tuesday.
Well, you did a great job on Tuesday, and you're unnecessarily humble. But yeah, I will be back in the Brooklyn bunker on Tuesday, and things will get some semblance of back to normal.
So tell me, what's the buzz like there? I mean, I've been there. It's been a couple years since I was there. I know it's very exciting, especially the first day. Everybody has hope, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the fact of this tournament is that for some people, just getting here is a huge prize.
And of course.
This is the only tournament you can't buy in. You have to win your way in. And it's really, it's not like there's another horse player convention where we all come together and directly deal with one another. So the vibes are always great. You go to the welcome cocktail party the night before, which, of course, I was at for a little while, and a lot of people you've only seen once a year, haven't seen since last year, and as a result, just I feel like everybody's in a good mood. The vibes are great, and there's that hope. There's this 2.5 million, a little bit larger, it's going to turn out, purse that the players are fighting for over the next 3 days, and everybody's trying to get a slice.
Nice. Yeah, it's very, very exciting, and it's pretty cool. Like you said, it's a chance to meet, if you've never met them before, all these people that you've maybe been communicating with online or on Twitter and just seeing their names on the leaderboard. And of course, if you've been before, it's a chance to kind of regroup and meet everybody. You know, it's just like, the energy in that room is amazing. Until you've been there, you don't even really understand it. But even those that aren't there, that haven't won their way in, that want to follow along, they have an opportunity, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're going to be having a lot of different good coverage some options for people looking to keep tabs on what's going on. I'll be posting updates on DRF Live. I'll be sending out some tweets via @loomsboldly. I also might even get around to doing some periscopes on @loomsboldly if you want a live look at what's going on in the ballroom. Some of the most comprehensive coverage will be coming from Steve Bick and his At the Races show. There'll be special broadcasts in the afternoon, I believe, on all 3 days. For more information about that, as well as a link to get in there live, stevebick.com, B-Y-K. That should be a lot of fun. I was on with Steve yesterday. As soon as we finish up today, I'm going to zip down there and hang out with him for a while, do some interviews. I believe J.K. will be joining me for a few minutes on there. And then directly after that for me, I'm going to be appearing live very briefly on the Matt Bernier show right as the tournament is kicking off, right before the first race at Gulfstream. So a lot of different ways to follow, maybe not quite the full wall-to-wall video coverage we've had in years past, but I don't think the coverage will suffer. We're going to have some great stuff, including those periscopes during dramatic moments. Should be very fun. I really should have charged my cell phone a little bit more.
Well, I'm sure there are plenty of outlets there. You could probably hunch in a corner for a little bit with a charger. All right. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Of course, you've covered the tour all year. You've covered all of these stories. You know many of these players personally. Do you have a favorite to win it all this year?
Well, there are people you could pick as a favorite, but it's sort of just a intellectual exercise. A tournament like this over the 3 days, I feel like it's folly to say, hey, this one of 654 entries is going to be the one. I mean, it's right. Just the math game is crazy. I do feel like I could pick you a group of 20 and almost guarantee somebody at the final table. In terms of the betting, there's been betting at Treasure Island on who will win the NHC. The favorite, the last time I checked, was Dave Gutfreund, who's been featured in my columns many times. Also been, I don't think we've ever had him on the pod, but he is one of the players I interviewed for the winning contest player. He'd be a name that would come up. And I just wrote a piece about it sort of came up as a joke on the last podcast we did together when we were all in New York. But the whatever happened to Jonathan Kinchin piece, I actually decided to write that. And talking to him, I definitely, I felt like he's got the eye of the tiger back. You know, I feel like maybe last year he's coming in, he's chasing $2 million. It's a little bit like Rocky III when Rocky's doing the car commercials and everything. And we got Jonathan last year, he's on the front cover of the racing form. It's, you know, he was so puffed up. And now I feel like he's been back in the gym punching the slabs of meat. And returns ready to rock and roll here. So I wouldn't rule out our co-host, honestly. He's been waiting for this. But there's so many players who are drawing live. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll be writing about a whole bunch of them through the coverage this week.
Don't call it a comeback, huh?
That would be what he would say. I'm sure. That would be what he would say. But it's check out that piece if you haven't. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, a lot of fun. We got the mandatory races already for today. The mandatory races just came out for tomorrow, and I don't know if you've seen them, but the Pegasus is one of them. So,
we talked about that. I wasn't sure what they were going to do. I'm glad they did that, though.
The Pegasus, as well as the McKnight and some other very, very interesting races. I think one of them as well is the Cal Cup Turf, which will include the return of the horse we were talking about very recently, Patriots Rule. Do you think half the room is going to be on that one again?
I think so, man. Tournament players, like all horse players, creatures of habit. That was that very race. Was it last year or 2 years ago? I can't even remember.
2 years ago. It was the one I was at. It was 2 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. So I would think he'll be well represented once again. We've got there'll be some hunch plays from the Massachusetts lot, and not having handicapped the race. I just know there's some horses like that that people think they have the associations to the time they bet them when they almost got up. It wouldn't surprise me to see him a little overrepresented in the room once again.
Right. Yeah, it's a fun race too. I mean, there's a lot of interesting ways to go in there, and he'll be a bit of a price, which I think is appealing to a lot of the players, especially with course, that they know. So, all right, Pete, we only have a couple more minutes, and then we'll let you go. I know you've got a very busy day. Anything else you want to tell people to keep a lookout for, follows on Twitter, ways for them to either get involved in the current one, albeit remotely, or looking ahead to qualify for next year if they didn't make it this year?
Yeah, we don't have any NHC qualifying opportunities in the DRF tournaments family this weekend, but we do have some action that could ultimately get you to big tournaments throughout the course of 2017. We're running an event for the Del Mar Summer Contest. That's always an exciting stop on the tour. We also have a credit builder that you could use to fund your play throughout the year. Definitely check out tournaments.drf.com. And if you've never played in tournaments, if you're curious what they're all about, it's the start of a new season. It's a pretty good time to investigate and check it out. And this year we're going to have some different and interesting opportunities coming up. There'll be some announcements very soon on the DRF tournaments website. So that's a good and an excellent stop for a tournament player to check out. You can also always find my tournament content on there via the tournament news dropdown. I've got a piece going to be posting any minute now about the new Hall of Fame class. Actually, a podcast friend is high on the list. He's one of the two folks being inducted Sunday night. Paul Sherman deservedly getting into the NHC Hall of Fame for his contributions as a member of the Players Committee. Also, of course, the tremendous success he's had with the three top 10 finishes and 15 qualifications in a row. Also, Steve Wolfson Sr., very proud to say that I identified both of those guys several years back to include in winning contest player as well. And Steve Wolfson Sr., who was running tournaments in Vegas long before there was an NHC, brought in Harvey Pack to host when he was running the Thoroughbred Challenge back at the Mirage as far back as the early 90s. And Steve Sr. also has qualified for this event something like 11 times. So very deserving class going in Sunday night. That's going to be a lot of fun as well.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely deserving. And I know you're busy, so I'll let you go. But thank you very much for taking your time out this morning before the start of NHC 18 out at Treasure Island in Las Vegas. And tell everybody good luck and that I miss them. And I'll certainly be following along a few thousand miles away.
Absolutely. I want to try to get on the treadmill tomorrow morning and listen to what you and Byron and Craig have to say about these races this week. And you're doing a great job. And I'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, Pete. All right. There you have it from Las Vegas. Peter Thomas Fornatel giving an update on NHC. Should be a fun one. Should be exciting. And somebody is going to take away a large sum of cash out there. So now back to Byron and Craig. Let's just jump right into it, boys. We got some good races to cover. And of course, the big event being the Pegasus World Cup Invitational, the first running, the inaugural running of the Pegasus World Cup Invitational, goes as the 12th race at Gulfstream Park on Saturday. Let's dive right in. Let's not mince around. Let's get right to the main event, and I'll start with you, Byron. I'll put you on the spot, okay? A lot of people are calling this a two-horse race. Do you see it as such?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I think you can look at the Breeders' Cup Classic as a pretty good barometer. I mean, a gap of nearly 11 lengths back to Keen Ice. Now, right. That's... You know, they were brilliant, and they ran exceptionally fast, and not just in that race. They've been fast horses for, you know, Arrogate over his last two starts, the Travers and the Breeders' Cup Classic, and California Chrome, you know, has just such a stellar record overall. It's very hard for me to see someone other than these two winning the race. Now, I think you could always have circumstance where maybe one of the two maybe just has an off day or something, and maybe you could get a price horse into the exacta, but I don't really see one of the two horses. I'm not giving you any great insight. They're 6-5, okay. 7-5, but I think that's, you know, that's okay. Two horse race.
All right, so I'll put you on the spot then. Let's take a stand. Two questions, and then Craig, you can think about it. You get a little bit of an advantage because I'm going to ask you these questions after I ask Byron. So assuming you see the race the same way as him, which is that the only one of two can win. But we'll get to that in a second. So Byron, of the two, which one is going to win? And then the second question is, will you play the race or are you just watching?
California Chrome will win, and I will just watch. Okay. I'm just not, it's just a general rule. It takes a whole lot for me to have to bet a horse that's lower than 2-1. I just tend to just sit on my hands. And it's such a great race. I could watch this one and not feel the need to play it. You know, it's yeah. the $5,000 claimer at Turfway on a Thursday night. If I'm just sitting around with nothing to do, that I feel the need to bet to have some interest in the race. But this will just be awesome just to watch, to be honest with you. I mean, I really must commend Frank Stronach for putting together a race like this. I mean, as Jay Privman noted in one of his stories earlier, it's the only reason California Chrome is running is because mm-hmm. of the purse of this race. He would be at the farm getting ready for studs, so we get to see another great matchup. And you know, he's really promoted it well with that you know, the MMA boxer you know, promoting it and all that. So it's pretty exciting stuff. So but I'm on California Chrome.
All right, so Craig, do we have two for California? Well, first, I'll start. Do you see any other horse possibly winning the race aside from the top two?
No, I don't. I'm the same as Byron. I mean, the Breeders' Cup Classic was probably a better field than this, and yet they were 10, 11 lengths in front of everyone else. They're horses that don't need things to go their own way. They won from on the lead. They won track and the pace. So, no, let's keep it short and say no. Sure. One of these two is going to win.
All right, so which one?
I'm more on the Arrogate side. You know, he won the Classic with not an ideal trip. He gets a better post draw here, and I think it's going to be a lot to ask for Chrome to beat him with a disadvantage. You know, just a slight disadvantage, but I think it's definitely the tables are turned a little, and I side with Arrogate.
All right, so I'm going to ask you this, and Byron, I'll get you to weigh in too. Our colleague Jay Privman tweeted out yesterday that Baffert showed him that Arrogate has a three-quarter right hind shoe preventing a small abscess on the inside quarter from becoming a quarter crack. Does that information concern either of you in terms of Arrogate tomorrow, or is this just in Baffert we trust and he knows how to get a horse ready, and if he's not concerned, I'm not concerned?
I wouldn't be that concerned about it. In every big race, you get a lot more reporting on these kinds of things that you wouldn't for an everyday race. I mean, if you think of the tens, the hundreds of races that we've bet on as horse players, in which we didn't know every little bit of information on a given horse, you know, whether he missed 3 days of training or whether he whatever it might be. The fact is having watched this horse, and of course, since the Breeders' Cup, we've only had a chance to really watch him train because he has not run. They bypassed his prep because of the inclement weather out west. But, I mean, he's looked fantastic training. You watch him gallop around the track there at Gulfstream, and he just goes. It would be like if you had to take a picture of what a horse should look like galloping, which, at least for me, is energetic but controlled, not like a runoff, obviously, you know, but just looking like he's happy, and if he ever got a cue to take off, he would, but that he's not. He's just waiting right on his rider, and it to me just goes super smooth. He's got a beautiful stride. I would just say that if anything, it's just disclosure, which is a good thing in this game, but I would not let that dissuade me if I were an Arrogate supporter.
Craig, any concerns with that info, or are you kind of in Byron's camp?
No, I have a long-standing rule. I try not to let things affect my handicapping that I don't know much about, or like he said, don't consider on your regular everyday race on a Thursday. So something like that that I don't follow and wouldn't even know what it means, I'm not going to let it affect my betting.
Understandable. So I'm kind of with you, Craig. I think, you know, though I would love as a race fan to see California Chrome go out as a winner, as a handicapper, I just think Arrogate might be the better horse of the two. His last two races were just so brilliant. And while California Chrome is really, really good and at times can be brilliant, and that positional speed, I think, will help him negate the whatever negative that the 12 post might be for him. While all of that is the factor, I think Arrogate, just what I've seen from him in terms of the brilliance in his races and even the brilliance in some of his workouts, I think he just could be an amazing horse. And if I can believe that he might not even be the favorite, maybe I'll try and play around a little bit, nothing too crazy, but try and get alive in a pick four ending with Arrogate on Saturday. And then if for whatever reason I'm wrong and California Chrome wins, then I'll be cheering for him as a race fan. That's for sure.
Yeah, same here for me. Like I said, I'm a Chrome fan. And if I do happen to bet the race and he beats me, then I won't sweat that too much.
Now, let's talk pace scenario for a second here. Craig, you've, of course, got your Timeform US pace projector. It's out. It's available. I believe this is the race of the day for Timeform US. I think the McKnight will be a free one as well. In the pace projector, it has three horses out or near the lead. Let's talk a little bit about that. Talk about the scenario and what you expect to happen going into the first turn.
You know, I kind of suspect it's going to look similar. I think Arrogate's Noble Bird's going to go to the lead, I believe. I think they're pretty much set that that's their plan. I don't really see any reason for anybody to fight with him for the lead. Arrogate, assuming he breaks well, which he hasn't had much problem doing, he's going to probably sit right off the outside of him, and then maybe Chrome will come. I mean, he's not going to want to be too wide into the turn, and I suspect he's going to be right there, either, you know, right off the flank of Arrogate or maybe just a little bit in front of him.
Byron, as far as the pace goes, what do you think? I know I've heard some people saying that they think, okay, with the one post again, maybe it's going to be like the Travers all over again, and Mike Smith's going to get Arrogate out on the lead, try and get him to cut the corner on the first turn, and then game over. What do you think? Obviously, you're more on the Chrome side. How do you see the pace scenario playing out?
Well, I looked at this in detail and watched a couple of the replays, or more than a couple, but a couple of recent ones for Arrogate. And, you know, I think what's key is, and if anybody can go to YouTube and watch the Breeders' Cup Classic replay, then they have a nice overhead shot, and you can, I tweeted it out, but you can just see the reaction time that California Chrome has from the gate is brilliant. He just, not only does he break sharply, but he gets in stride in just, you know, a step or two, and he is literally like about a length or two in front of the opposition. And although the Classic may have been a perfect example for him in that regard, you know, he is consistently a very, very good gate horse. Obviously, they want to clear a lot of this traffic, so I think he's going to be sent. I think that naturally, Noble Bird, they're going to want to send him. The only question with Noble Bird is sometimes he just doesn't break. So right. You have that that in the mix that could happen. Right. I'm not saying that's more probable than not, but it could happen. It seems to happen at about, I don't know, about one out of five times with him or thereabouts, you know. So, in looking at Arrogate, even when he made the lead in the Travers, and he did have the rail, and Mike Smith sent him away from there, in watching the replay, when they actually passed the wire the first time, you know, he was about third, I want to say, maybe about a length or so off the pace. So I don't think he has, and it was only as they advanced toward the turn and cutting the corner that he kind of shook clear. I don't think they're going to give him that opening. I'd be surprised if they would. So I kind of envision a scenario where you've got Noble Bird with, maybe a half-length lead over California Chrome, and then I think you're going to have Arrogate stalking. And then the other horse that I could see in the mix, Whether or not I don't think he'll be a pace player in terms of contesting the front runners, but whether or not he provides a little bit of traffic to him in Arrogate or not is Neolithic.
Sure.
Neolithic is a horse that didn't really show much speed at all until he got blinkers, and he has since either been first or second in the early stages of his last two races. Now, when he went to the lead last time, you know, he had the rail, he was 1-10 or whatever he was, and I think they didn't want to take any chances, so I don't think they want to go to the lead, but this is a horse that has been lit up a little bit with blinkers who, you know, I think potentially could be a bit of a fly in the ointment for Arrogate if, you know, he pins him in. You know, he's got post three, prayer for relief in post two, doesn't really have any speed. So,
right.
I really, you know, as odd as it would seem for a horse breaking from post 12 with a short run to the turn, I really think California Grome is going to be too wide, would be my projection into the first turn.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the concern. And I think the advantage for California Chrome out in that post is the ones to his immediate inside have almost no speed. So he'll be easily able to outbreak. I mean, I haven't watched any of Aragon's races in South America, but the sense that I get is he's a dead closer. So he shouldn't have very much early speed breaking. Lucky. He's not a speed horse, certainly keen ice, not known for his gait speed, even Semper Fortis. I don't see him having any problem getting in front of those. And while he might get caught two or three or four wide on the turn, I don't see him out in the eight path, for instance. And then from there, yeah, it's just kind of a race. I'd be surprised if on the backstretch it's anything more than Arrogate and Chrome. But we've certainly seen strange things happen, and if gets crazy up front, I wouldn't be shocked to see somebody coming from off the pace and at least splitting the exacta, if not completely upsetting everything. So I'll put both of you on the spot again. Craig, we'll start with you since we started with Byron last time. If you're playing the race, and I haven't asked you if you are, but if you're playing the race and if you're playing verticals in the race, do you have any sort of long shot to get into the exotics to spice things up a bit?
I don't know how much you can consider long shots for third and fourth because, you know, when you're talking about the top two are going to take all the money. But the two I'm interested in, and it's because you can't spread. If you spread in a race like this, you're just throwing money away.
You bet against yourself, especially if you're using the top two in the top two spots.
Exactly. So the two that interest me in third and fourth, and maybe just for a little bit putting them in second, would be Keen Ice, who, you know, kind of clunked up for a distant third in the Classic and is likely to do so again. And also Breaking Lucky, because I just happen to think he's better than the rest of these horses. And, you know, he may get overlooked in the wagering. So if he's 6th, 7th choice in this field of 12, and I can get him in the third, maybe he can find some value there.
Byron, how about you?
I sprinkled a little Neolithic in the mix, you know, just on the idea that he is at his best right now, much improved with blinkers. I don't know if he's necessarily good enough, obviously, to contend with the first two, but he's in sharp form. It's Pletcher at Gulfstream. You know, I liked Craig's mention of, you know, of Breaking Lucky. I kind of think that Keen Ice will be kind of the popular choice among many, you know, to fulfill the, you know, the exotics. Because he's kind of done it before, you know,
sure.
And he kind of has that late running style that kind of lends itself to finishing in that spot, you know. So, but, you know, I, to be honest with you, I think there's such a wide disparity in the quality of the horses beyond the top two to the others that it's, oh, man, it's a tricky one to be honest with you. I'd rather focus on other races for betting, to be honest with you.
For sure. Yeah, like you said, Byron, it's Pletcher, it's Gulfstream, it's a Saturday. So you know, I wouldn't be surprised if both of his horses run well. And certainly we've seen with Keen Ice, he's good enough if he gets things his own way and he gets the kind of pace scenario that really helps his running style. He's good enough to beat a horse that clearly is better than him. Whether or not he can beat two horses that are clearly better than him is another question. But yeah, if I were going to try and split or even go crazy with somebody on top over those two, you know, I could see Keen Ice. I could see doing a very, very small play of Keen Ice on top of Chrome and Arrogate. Because even if you do that try for a dollar, it's you know, it's probably what, a 50-to-1 payout at least, 100-to-1 payout maybe, depending on what Keen Ice's actual odds are.
He's such an interesting horse in that. Let's assume for a moment that, well, we shouldn't assume, but if he does indeed lose this race, you know, he's 2 for 19, so he'd be 2 for 20.
Right.
But he has nearly 2.4 million in earnings. He could go
right
over 3 million very easily in here.
Right.
It's just amazing for a horse that wins as infrequently as he does how much he's knocked out in these big races with you know, minor awards. And obviously, you know, he did win the Travers, which was his, you know, his biggest payday.
And then maybe we'll see him in an N2X next out.
And he might run third in it. You never know.
The only thing for me that makes the race even remotely worth considering betting is, I mean, let's be honest here, there's probably five horses that have no shot to hit the board.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you know, I'm not suggesting, and I probably, if I do play this race sort of from a vertical standpoint, and I may very well not, but it kind of depends on whether or not, if I'm going to use the top two in the top two spots, then I've got to get the third and or fourth choices out of my tries and supers, or it's just not worth it to me. But if for whatever reason there's a horse that's taking money that I don't really like that much and I feel like I can play him out, you know, those are the kinds of verticals that I like to do. And that was actually my approach in the Classic. And, you know, it actually worked out there. Unfortunately, I think people are kind of on to Keen Ice and are going to use him as a key in third. But when he was 30-something to 1 in the Classic, you know, he presents value underneath sometimes. All right, let's move on to some of the races in the undercard. And if you're looking to maybe get alive in the pick four and I guess in the pick five as well, the second leg of the pick five, is there a late pick five ending with the – I don't think there is a late – oh, there is a late pick five ending in the Classic, the Pegasus World Cup Classic Invitational is ending in the 12th, starting in the 8th, is a maiden special weight. We won't cover that, but if you want to play the pick five, you start with there. The second leg is also the first leg of the pick four, which is the 9th race, which we will discuss. It's the Gulfstream Park Turf Sprint. We started with Byron last time. Craig, let's start with you this time. Where'd you go in here?
The horse that interested me the most is, shockingly, you guys talked about it, but it's Pletcher on a Saturday, and that's Manhattan Dan. He moves into the Pletcher barn, and this horse really impressed me last year when he was a young 3-year-old. He kind of struggled at 2 when they stretched him out. He always looked like a sprinter when he was running, and he, you know, he would make the lead in fast fractions and back up. And when they finally gave him a shot at 5 furlongs, he just completely blitzed 2 fields. You know, just look like a breeder, you know, a possible Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint winner if it was at 5 furlongs, which it wasn't last year. But something went wrong. He had some minor issues, but he's been back working steady for about 2 months now and looking good doing it. And, you know, I just think he's a horse given his inside draw that's going to go to the front, and he's going to be tough to run down.
All right, Byron, where'd you land in the Turf Sprint?
I went with the horse inside Manhattan Dan, the number 1, Rainbow Air. This is a horse that is normally would race rather close to the pace, but last time out at Gulfstream Park West, he got bumped in the early stages, and he was farther off the pace than usual. And he showed a new dimension, rallying from 6th. So I think that's... not only that, he ran quick. He ran a nice 102 buyer. His other dirt sprint, he got a 101 buyer. That's his recent ones. He had some lower ones earlier in his career. But, you know, he's very quick. There's a lot of speed in here, as you would expect. It's a 5-furlong race, so a lot of times they don't have time to get tired. But I think he can just kind of work out a stalking trip sitting behind the cluster of horses that are going to go blitz out of there. I don't know if there's any of these other speed horses can clear Manhattan Dan. There's some really good ones like Power Alert and Mongolian Saturday and so forth. I think those horses kind of took the worst of the draw because they could be end up being, you know, 3-4 wide, something like that. So I'm just kind of hoping he can follow Manhattan Dan, and, you know, if the pace takes a toll, he can, you know, pick him up in the lane and run him down. So he's a horse that runs well fresh, so I would expect a strong performance from him, even though he hasn't raced since late November.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Jason Service hadn't really tried him on the turf. He's done quite well on the dirt, 9-for-20 lifetime, 8-for-16 on a fast dirt track. In a few starts back, he said, let's try him again on the turf. It seems like he's got a bit of a new life, posting a couple of career, or at least if not career tops, at least recent top buyers. In that last out, if he's able to repeat the Gulfstream Park West race, then he's absolutely a player in here. One thing I have noted so far at this Gulfstream meet, speed has been lethal, and there has not been a closer winning one of these 5-furlong turf sprints. And by closer, I mean one that was more than 5 lengths off at the first call since the 1st of January. So in 2017, we're almost 4 weeks into it now. We have not seen a closer win here. So speed is lethal. Let's talk pace a little bit. Your pace projector, Craig, has the 6 L deal coming from dirt moving to turf, setting the lead and stalked very closely by Mongolian Saturday. Power Alert, strangely, is back in 4th or 5th. How did you see this race playing out from a pace standpoint, and where do you think your pick, Manhattan Dan?
I think Manhattan Dan's going to go to the front. It's probably one of the weaknesses of the pace projector. I mean, he hasn't raced since he was a young 3-year-old, and we base it on those figures. I expect him to be a little faster. Plus, he had run in a few routes, which holds his early speed rating back a little bit. But I think from his post, he's going to gun and go right to the front. And interestingly enough, kind of my negative angle in this one is Power Alert, and that's because of the pace projector. He's a horse who really needs to be up front. I think he's only won from 3rd or worse once in his career. When he's 3rd or further back, he's 1-for-9, where if he's 1 too early, he's 5 out of 7. And I just don't see him being able to get that close up in this field loaded with speed and having a post position edge. I think the pace projector's right about him, and he's a big reason I think there'll be some value in the race.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a very, very interesting race, and there's a lot of different ways you can go in here. Mongolian Saturday, we've barely even mentioned him. He's the Breeders' Cup Turf sprint winner from a couple years ago, and he is the Morning Line 7-2 choice coming out of the Breeders' Cup Turf sprint down the hill in his last start at Santa Anita. Seems to be working well, just 2 works since that race, but he's run well off of a layoff. Either of you guys think he's got a shot in here, or is he one that at the 7-2 morning line just presents value for the rest of the field?
I would tend to think that he would not be a horse that I would be excited about at 7-2, you know, particularly if the horse that I like, Rainbow Air, is 6-1. You know, I do respect him. I mean, he's been a little erratic over the last, you know, year or so. He did win the Woodford in October at Keeneland, which was a race that he won before the Breeders' Cup before that. Now, in his defense, you know, he was traveling all over the country. He was going to Hong Kong. He was going to Ascot. He was going to Newmarket. You know, he was running in a fast-paced Breeders' Cup turf sprint down the hill, you know. So he does have some excuses, but I just, to be honest with you, I think 7-2, if he's that price, and I have a hard time thinking he's going to be that low, to be honest. But if he were that low, I wouldn't want no part of him.
Craig?
Yeah, He's one in horizontals. I wouldn't want him to beat me and throw me out of a pick four or pick five because, I mean, when he's here in the U.S. at five and a half furlongs, I mean, he's almost always right there. I think he's won three of his last five, and his losses are by a nose and a head or something like that. You know, as a win bet, no, I wouldn't be interested at the morning line. But who knows if we're going to get that. To be frank, the morning line hasn't been very good at all at Gulfstream.
Right.
So kind of play it by ear. But, yeah, in a pick fours, pick fives, I wouldn't want to leave him out because he's going to be there at the finish. If he gets beat more than a length, it'd be a shocker.
Yeah, and, he's shown he's pretty legitimate, even off the layoff. I actually was against him at first in the Woodford, and then I went back and looked a little bit further. Some of those races he was running against, I mean, look, you got the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint winner who's 50-1 in a Newmarket race. I mean, our turf sprinters compared to those turf sprinters, and he didn't even really disgrace himself that much. He only lost by 5 lengths against the best turf sprinters in the world. He's legitimate, and it looks like he's kind of gone off form, but you got to remember, he was 30-1, 30-1, 16-1. You know, racing at Sha Tin, racing at Ascot, those are really tough fields. They're not coming off of optional claimers at Tampa. So that said, I'm going to take a little bit of a shot with a horse that I think will be a price, who's coming out of a Turf Dash at Tampa and recently had been running in optional claimers at Gulfstream Park West. That's the outside horse, number 12, Incensed. He didn't get the best of it from the draw. He's got some good early speed. I hope he doesn't get too cooked by the pace. I hope he's able to track and settle a little bit. But that last race, if you guys haven't watched the Turf Dash where he lost to Power Alert, watch it, because he got completely checked out of the race right before the turn. Looked like he was completely done, and then rallied to get second. He's young. He's four. He's a young four. I think there could be some talent there, and at a bit of a price, I wouldn't be surprised if he runs well in here. So I'll take a shot with him. All right, let's move on to the next race in the sequence. It's the 10th race. It is the first of a couple 12 furlong marathons on the turf, and I'm not even going to pronounce it, but it's the one for the fillies and mares. It's a grade 3. Byron, do you want to take a shot at pronouncing this one?
The name of the race?
Of the race, yeah.
The La Proviante, I believe.
I'll take your word. I'll take your word for it.
Even some of the horses in it are a bit hard. You know, I would call the 7 horse, if it were me, I would call it Arliss, but it's apparently Arl when it runs. So, anyway, but
those French with their silent S's at the end of the words. All right, well, let's start with you, Byron. Who do you see? How do you see this race playing out? It'll be the first 12 furlong race of the meet, and then we'll get a second one right afterwards in the 11th with the McKnight. How do you see the race shaping out, and who do you think is going to win?
Well, I see the established class of the race, I think, is Fused and Arl. I think with some of the others being maybe just a cut below them, they're both also experience, especially Suffused, you know, going a long distance. But I settled on Arl, who I think has been, though she does have a lengthy history of running second, I think she is was a little bit unlucky in a couple of her races. Most recently, she lost at Del Mar to Nuevo, I guess it's record, I'm not sure what it is. But anyway, she was in what seemed a dream position, you know, covered up, sitting third, and Rosario decided to take her out 3 wide around the second of the 2 turns, and ended up losing ground while Nuevo Record took her spot, saved ground, and beat her lip right on the wire. And then in the Glen Falls last year, she lost to Suffused, and though she ran well, Rosario lost his whip in the race. I'm not saying that that she would have won, but she just kind of had. And I thought Suffused had a really good trip that day for a horse that was rallying from far back. She was able to save a lot of ground. So I think Arl might have a little bit of a fitness edge over Suffused, in that she even though she hasn't run since November. She was prepared to run in a race in Santa Anita last month, or maybe it was early this month, might have been early January. But unfortunately, the weather threw a wrench in that. So I think she's kind of been sitting on go, whereas Suffused, you know, hasn't run since the EP Taylor last year, which was back in October.
All right, Craig, how do you see the race playing out? And let's talk also pace projector. How much do you put into pace when we're talking about horses going 12 furlongs?
Well, I'll be honest, the pace projector is at its least accurate at a mile and a half on turf because just so much depends on the riders and strategy. So to be honest, I don't put a whole lot of stock into the pace projector other than to see who I think may lead or may not. You know, if it says it's going to be a fast pace, I'm always skeptical because it's pretty rare that somebody busts out at mile and a half setting a fast pace. I mean, it happens, but it's hard to predict. I found this group is pretty evenly matched. Like I said, there is a bit of a class edge for Suffused and Arl. I'm a little concerned with Suffused. She didn't run particularly well here last year, and looking through her PPs, it seems like her best races come on some of the bigger turf courses that we have where, you know, Gulfstream's a little more on the small side. I haven't looked to see where the rail is. I think the rail's out for this race, if I remember right, at about
84, yes.
Yeah, 84 feet for this one, which is different from the next one we're going to talk about, I believe.
Right.
So at 3-1 morning line, I wasn't too excited by her. So I kind of landed on Flip Cup at a price. When I see an evenly matched field, I want to find a horse that's going to pay me at the windows if I'm right. You know, she's a six-year-old mare that didn't try turf until late in her career, but three of her last four have actually been on turf, and the other one was rained off. And she's run two of her best, her two best career time form U.S. speed figures on turf. She looks like she's going to like a mile and a half. She was flying at the end last time when she got up to be third in the Via Bourgeois Stakes, or however, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. I remember the horse, but I don't remember the pronunciation. You know, but she was wide closing, making up a lot of ground, and she just kind of interested me.
All right. In this race, I decided, I'm kind of with you, Craig. It's a wide open race. I think Suffused may be the best horse. She kind of got the worst of the post with the 12. I know it's 12 furlongs. She's got a lot of time to figure it out, but she still could potentially get a wide trip around, and saving ground, I think, is key when you've got horses that are as evenly matched as I think this field is. And I was just afraid she was going to be a little too short and ended up, you know, perhaps end up being the horse everyone lands on. The one I picked was number 4, Desiree Clary. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but that's my shot for Christophe Clément. And unfortunately, and I say this not because he's not a great rider, but unfortunately, Javier Castellano is taking the mount. I say that because I'm afraid that's going to kill my price. I really liked, I know you like Flip Cup in here. I think Desiree Clary ran the best race in the last race that where she lost to Paige, was ahead in front of Flip Cup. She went 41 feet further than Paige did that day. Now she comes into this race, gets a little bit of extra ground. She's done well enough at when was kind of up against it a little bit in the Long Island. I think she'll be a bit of a price, and I think, you know, for a somewhat lightly raced 5-year-old mare, I think she could be a good one. All right, we've only got about 10 minutes left, and we've got two races to cover, so let's be somewhat quick as we go through the W.L. McKnight. It's the 11th race. It's a grade 3. It's also 12 furlongs, and the rails are at 0 in this one. So, Craig, we'll go back to you. I know the pace projector should – I know it's probably not a hot pace for a 12 furlong race, but there's a couple horses in here that have some legitimate speed. Do you think we'll have more pace to run out in this one?
Yeah, I think – I mean, Diamond Bachelor is almost sure to just take the lead and go as fast as he can, as far as he can, which will probably be about a mile before he drops out of it. But it will definitely set things up for the closers, I would think. And the one I happen to like the most is Mr. Maybe. I think you can draw a line through his last race when it was on a yielding course and a moderate pace. The only other time he's running a grade 3, he romped, and I just expect a big effort out of him.
All right, Byron, where did you go in this race the McKnight.
Well, I saw this race is very evenly matched. I think a lot of it, turf races in general, a lot of times come down to trip. So I went looking for, you know, a little bit of a price. I'm not sure if he's up to some of these horses from a class perspective, but I'm going to give him a try. To Glebe, who is breaking from the rail. He just won the Allen Jerkins at 2 miles. That race was not as strong as this one, but he is in good form. He's one going shorter. He's on the fence. Hopefully he can save some ground and get a nice trip. But I just kind of think that he's a horse that is a horse that was claimed for 62.5. Just, I think a lot of times people in these graded races, they look at former claiming horses and they view them a little skeptically. But some of those optional claimers can be quite salty races, and he's obviously improved quite a bit. And I think he'll drift up from his 6-1 morning line. So I think he might be 8 or 10. So we shall see. But, you know, I respect Craig's choice as well, and I think he can make good cases for Danish Dyna former, you know, the veteran Twilight Eclipse. I mean, those are some pretty tough, classy old turf marathoners.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you, Byron, in that I'm taking a little bit of a shot with a price here, and I'm taking another former claimer, actually the horse that Taglib beat in his last start, which is number 2 Montclair. Because even though in the short running line says inside run into the stretch, Taglib went 49 feet fewer than Montclair did. Montclair was out in the 11 post. He was chasing a ridiculously slow pace. I mean, they went, 51 flat, 143 flat. He was way behind, and he came rallying. He'll get a lot more pace to run at. He's got a better post here. He should be able to save a little bit more ground, and I think he'll be a very, very good price, probably even more than his 10-1 morning line. Although I do agree with Craig, I think Mr. Maybe might be the most likely winner. I just don't believe we're going to get 6-1. Javier, Chad, Turf, Gulfstream. You know, I think that's more a recipe for 5-2. So, all right, let's move on to our last stakes race that we're going to cover on the show today. It is the 4th public handicapper race, which is the 7th at Santa Anita. It's the Cal Cup Turf Classic. A couple horses dropping out of the Breeders' Cup Classic, Breeders' Cup Turf, although Ashley Loves Sugar did run once since that race and is the morning line 8-5 favorite. Byron, we'll start with you. Where'd you land in this one?
I didn't have a creative selection in this race. You know, I like Ashley Loves Sugar. Why do I always want to say she? It's a he, but boy, the name sure sounds like a right. She, doesn't it? You know, this is a very classy horse, very consistent, a winner of 4 of 8 at Santa Anita. You know, fires just about every time, even when, you know, he's off the board. It's like a 5th in the Breeders' Cup turf. It's just a very, very classy horse. I guess, you know, the obvious disadvantage is the 8-5. I don't think, you know, distance matters much to this horse. I think, you know, anything a mile and an eighth to the distance of this race to a mile and a half, he's fully capable of. I guess if I had looking for a price, my alternative selection would be if he will, who is back routing after just not really faring so well going down the hill in Stakes Company, but training very well and was quite a fast winner the last time that he went a route. So he's 8-1. So he'd be kind of my backup if the public is all over Ashley Loves Sugar and drops below 8-5.
All right, Craig, how about you?
You know, those two are the only – those two are two of the three that interested me. The other one's the other obvious horse, What of You, who set a blazing pace in the Breeders' Cup Mile. I think he came back a little too quick his next out when he kind of dueled on the lead and tired in the Seabiscuit. But he's had a good rest, and most importantly, he's probably not going to face any pressure up front. So he could be a little tough to run down, but I think the winner comes from those three.
Well, we haven't mentioned Rallis, who is dropping out of the Breeders' Cup Classic, is, I believe, 4-1 on the morning line for Doug O'Neill. Was talk about running in the Pegasus, but they just decided to go in this shot. Craig, do you give him any shot at all in this race?
I mean, sure, he has a shot. He has decent speed figures, but I'm kind of leery of a horse like him. He's, especially on turf, he's a horse I call gets a lot of suck-up speed figures.
Yeah.
He doesn't really do any running through the lane. He just kind of picks off horses to go from, you know, 8th to 5th, or, you know, just maintains his position in the middle of the pack. And at short prices, I'm not interested.
I'm against him as well. How about you, Byron?
I think he could get a piece more so than win it. It is hard to believe to me that he's developed into this, like, deep closing horse. This is a horse that won the Hopeful as a 2-year-old.
Yeah, I know. Right.
I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it? Right. I mean, it's just, right. You wonder where all that speed went. But go figure. But I wouldn't read too much for anybody that is, you know, into, you know, the fact they considered the Pegasus. It was because the owner, Paul Redham, had already bought the $1 million buy-in, which he planned for Nyquist, so he had to run somebody. Right. And you know, I can't even recall who his representative is in the race, but
Semper Fortis now,
So he didn't have a whole lot to choose from. So you know, I think they made the wise choice running him here rather than there. He's clearly the Hopeful notwithstanding. He's shown more on turf than dirt.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm against him here. I'll give you a trainer stat from Formulator. Doug O'Neill, 1-42, 36-cent ROI past 2 years in turf routes following a 60-day layoff or more. I'm kind of with Craig. He's a bit of a suck up for some of those big figures. For me, I'm with the other logical that we mentioned a little bit. What a View gets a little bit of a freshening, gets back to the Santa Anita course where he's done very little wrong. He loves this distance. He doesn't need the front, but he can take it if he's given the lead. And I think he just might be the best one in here. But I do agree, Ashley Loves Sugar is also logical. All right, we're all but out of time. So I wanted to thank both of you for joining, taking some of your time out on this Friday. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Byron. I hope everybody enjoyed listening. I hope we'll have both of you back on soon. And thanks to everyone listening at the NHC. Good luck out there this year. Thanks to Peter Thomas Fornatel, who will be back in this hosting role on Tuesday. So until then, have a great weekend, everyone.